the Cracking Cybersecurity Podcast. I'm Anna, editor at TICE. As part of our summer special this week, we have an interview with Technical Director at Tenable, Gavin Millard, who shares insight about the attacker's advantage. But first, here is Andrew Lloyd, President and Executive Vice President of Sales and Marketing at Coreiro, who discusses the latest in DDoS attacks.
Well, funnily enough, DDoS attacks have been quite topical in the last several months. At a complete headline level, the world record for the largest ever DDoS attack was broken twice in the month of March. The record now stands at 1.7 terabits per second. And that lasted, the previous record lasted for all of 4 days, but it hadn't been broken in the previous 18 months. That's the complete glamour end of DDoS attacks. Most DDoS attacks are relatively modest, both in terms of duration. So we see in our quarterly statistics report that 93% of attacks last less than 10 minutes. 73% of attacks are 5 gigabits per second or less. So they're modest in amplitude and relatively short in duration. And our average customer is attacked 6 times every day. So if you are a website that has a revenue cash register on it, or if you are governed by one of the ever-increasingly tight pieces of legislation, or you're just simply a global brand that needs to protect the value of its brand in order that customers and suppliers don't think that you have weak security, then you will want to be able to protect yourself in real time from a DDoS attacks. Year over year, we've seen a 50% increase in absolute numbers of attacks. So DDoS, whilst it may be a 25-year-old problem, it hasn't gone away. It changes over time.
What's been the most significant change recently?
Publicly, the most significant change is governments coming forward and saying other nation states are attacking me. So various people in the West have accused various people in the East, most notably the Russian and the Chinese, of trying to interfere with their state. And whether that interference is in elections, you know, at one level, even in the UK, you can not interfere with the process of voting itself in that we use paper and pencil, put a cross on a piece of paper and stuff your vote in a box. What you can interfere with, though, is things like voter registration. Where you've got electronic voting, all mayhem can be let loose courtesy of DDoS and other nasty stuff on the internet. More likely, though, what we're starting to see are publicly disclosed attacks on so-called critical national infrastructure. So on the 10th of May, across all 28 member states within the European Union, a new piece of legislation came into force with the wonderful acronym of NIS. It applies to transportation by air, rail, road haulage, maritime. It applies to utilities involving electricity, gas, drinking water. It applies to healthcare and upstream oil and gas. Basically, things that if they stop working, society breaks down in a hurry. You know, only last weekend we saw an attack on Visa, and we saw the mayhem that ensued by people not being able to buy things. It's that type of critical national infrastructure that if they're taken down by a cyber attack, and DDoS is the tool of choice for many cyber criminals, then all hell breaks loose. And now governments across Europe have the real teeth associated with a £17 million fine if these critical national infrastructure organizations get it wrong.
Well, let's talk about how the bad guys are working in this DDoS attack situation. How do they distract security teams? That's what I'm interested in.
So distraction is one method of attack, so-called smokescreen attack. So any of us, if we were criminally minded, can go and rent a DDoS attack for a few tens of dollars. So allegedly, if you went onto the dark web, you can discover that for about $40, you can buy quite a devastating attack. And you can launch it wherever you want to. Now, it is a criminal act, so I'm not encouraging you to do that. In fact, we're actively discouraging you to do it. But you can target any website you like or any online asset that you like that is exposed to the internet. And what we've found is that there's a disproportionate small amount of money required to launch an attack versus the amount of damage that an attack can do. One of the damages is that you distract the security guys by launching, say, a 5 gigabit per second attack. And either that is enough to overwhelm your defenses, in which case one of the attack vectors you launch actually gets through and creates some mayhem, or more likely the smokescreen attack is the equivalent of me waving my hands away to the side and saying, look at my hands, and I pick your pocket using another method. So it's a distraction mechanism because it is very large and it will get their attention and the screens will be glowing red while something small happens somewhere else that would otherwise get their attention but will not get their attention when somebody's, to quote Michael Caine, blown the bloody doors off.
So how can we better protect ourselves in this circumstance?
So what we strongly encourage people to do is have a DDoS defense. If your business cares about being able to stay online no matter what, then we will encourage people to a real-time DDoS defense, so one that can detect and automatically mitigate, ideally in seconds rather than tens of minutes.
I'm Gavin Millard, Technical Director at Tenable. I've been with Tenable for 4 years now. I work with a lot of our large organisations helping reduce their attack surface.
So, Gavin, organisations and individuals know that patching is important, but it's challenging to protect every vulnerability. How do you know which ones to protect?
Yeah, great question. So, yeah, if you look at just last year, there was 20,000 vulnerabilities disclosed. It's a huge amount, but they weren't just any vulnerability. There was, on average, 9 to 10 critical or high vulnerabilities disclosed every single day. So, of course, we always hear about the ones in the press, the ones that got a logo and a catchy name, but 9 or 10 were critical or high every single day. Now, if you just go and patch high and critical, it's a never-ending job. I mean, you'd literally be running around like a headless chicken constantly. So what you need to be able to do is prioritize the risky from the risk-free, really not only understand the vulnerabilities that are exploitable, the things that people can take advantage of, but really understand the ones that people are taking advantage of. So I kind of liken this to the construct of a vulnerability is based on something called CVSS, which means, like, you know, do you have to be in the same room to exploit it, or can you exploit it from Azerbaijan? You know, is it something that's really complicated, or could I teach my mum to take advantage of it? So that's called CVSS, the base and temporal metrics of CVSS. They're like your personality traits of a vulnerability. It's like it's a bit like if I did a personality test with you, you'd probably have similar traits to Einstein, for example. But it doesn't mean that you would be able to create the next theory of relativity, like theory of relativity 2. What we need to do is pull in like threat intelligence and understand which vulnerabilities are being leveraged. And really that's like the biography, if you will, of the vulnerability. So by combining the two, you can start to prioritize the few vulnerabilities that you really, really need to make sure are addressed. For example, MS-1710, the one that was leveraged by WannaCry, Eternal Blue. Last year, the biggest vulnerability was CVE-2017-0199, which was an OLE vulnerability leveraged for delivering ransomware. Patch those things. Yeah, don't just patch it because it has a logo.
So at the moment, what's the threat on your mind?
Well, I think, rather than a particular threat, a particular vulnerability, of which there are many, I think the biggest concern that I see when talking to a lot of organizations is the fact that people just don't know what their environments look like. If you look at the digital transformation that's occurring, organizations' IT footprint is exponentially increasing. The compound annual growth rate of their infrastructures are increasing. The complexity is increasing. The different technologies, the different compute methods is increasing. So you have container and cloud and virtualization. You have IoT. You have OT, operational technology. And so a lot of organizations are really struggling just to understand what their environment looks like in the first place. And of course, that is foundational to good security. You have to understand what you have before you can protect it. So rather than saying, I'm concerned about CVE-2017-0199, I'm more concerned about the pure lack of visibility in infrastructures.
So how can we gain greater visibility?
Yeah, so I think organizations have to embrace the fact that the visibility is a foundational control to security. If you look at any best practice, be it NIST cybersecurity framework, Cyber Essentials in the UK, ISO 27001, ASD in Australia, all of these have a common theme, which is first off, understand your assets that are within your environment, and then understand the exposures on them, the vulnerabilities. And you know, unfortunately, a lot of organizations are kind of buying into the marketing hype around, you know, APT and others, you know, these catchy buzzwords, and they kind of forget the foundational, the fundamentals to security. So, you know, what organizations really should be considering is, how can I address those foundational controls first, and how can I make sure that I'm effectively addressing them as well?